Support for WPR comes from Mashup Americans, producers of the podcast To See Each Other, about a small Wisconsin town's fight to save its last public nursing home and the ensuing statewide battle. More at toseeeachother.org.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next spending the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. But Zorba, I decided I'm going to look up the official definition of the word virtual.
Okay,
so this is what Merriam-Webster's dictionary says. Virtual means being such in essence or effect, though not formally recognized or admitted. Does that sound like you? That doesn't sound like you. You're admitted. You're recognized.
It goes to show you how difficult definitions
language
can be.
Language is tricky.
Language is tricky, and dictionaries are even trickier than language. God, I hope that's not on the test, because repeat that virtually or specifically.
At any rate, Zorba's right there. We're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about kids, picky eaters, what you can do, and is there a genetic component here? Some interesting data, and black women, and also, really, women of color are not treated the same way when it comes to medical care concerning obstetrics and delivering a baby. And black women are more likely to undergo unnecessary C-sections. We'll talk about this and what this means in health in general.
Important stuff. And what is our special recipe today?
Spicy vodka chicken parmesan.
Ooh.
It's a great chicken parmesan. One of my favorite things, and this recipe is dynamite.
All right, to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. March 3rd, I was doing an outdoor activity, and I had a cold, what felt like a cold and runny nose and a headache, and it was a real distraction. Uh-huh. And so I opened up my little first aid kit and took an ibuprofen.
Uh-huh. So wait, you were in an outdoor activity. What was that outdoor activity? What were you doing?
Well, I was sitting on a little stool peering through a spotting scope at a rifle match, and I was scoring my fellow competitor.
Sure. Sure, I know about it. It turns out my neighbor's son and he makes rifles. I mean, he is a master rifler. He's got, in Belleville, he's got a little, little shop there, and he's known for rifling and going to shows like that. So,
cool.
Anyway, so you took out your first aid kit.
And I tore open the little paper envelope.
Sure.
And I took the ibuprofen, and it didn't seem like 15 minutes later, I just started feeling itchy, like 100 fleas were biting me, and started scratching like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked down. Yeah,
it was a dog.
Right on cue.
The dog knew its name was dog. You've got a well-trained dog
that's
there.
Oh, yeah. He sees a squirrel and he loses his mind. Anyway, I'm itching and I'm scratching and it's like really bad. And and I'm looking through the scope and I'm trying to, record each numerical value. And And then I just had this irresistible urge to close my eyes and take a nap right there in the middle of it. And that honestly was the last thing I remembered. And so next thing you know, I'm having a dream thinking, my friend is going to be really, really mad because I didn't get all his shots recorded on his scorecard. And my eyes popped open and everybody's looking down at me like, Mike, are you okay?
Oh, so you had actually, had a faint of some sort. You were obviously people came to you, so you collapsed. I mean, people observed it, and you collapsed. Wow.
Right. Lucky it was a low stool because I did a face plant.
Oh wow, not good at all.
Yeah. So they rolled me over, and eventually, somebody had an EpiPen, and I just wasn't there enough to say, "Hey, the EpiPen is located," you know, in center console of my truck.
So you have an EpiPen because of what? You're allergic to other things. What are the things you're allergic to?
Yes, because I'm also allergic to bee wasp stings.
Got it. I mean, because most people do not have an EpiPen in their car.
Right. And I should have had it in my kit, but it was a little ways off, but not too far. So, a friend on the line, he also had one. Mm-hmm. He jabbed me. Mm-hmm. So then not too long after that, the ambulance came, and my blood pressure at that moment when they took it was 80 over 50 or 60.
Not good.
Not good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got in the ambulance, and they took you to the hospital.
Took me to the hospital, and just about the same drill as when I got stung by a wasp. They pumped me, and oddly enough, that was at the national matches in Ohio. So
you are good at this. If you were in the national matches, you're obviously a sharpshooter, and you're really good at what you're doing, your hobby.
Yeah, I'm okay at it. So, I didn't tell you the second half of the second story. So I'm in a place where where I was working, you go unconscious, you got to tell somebody in medical. So I did. And the nurse takes one look at me, and she says, "You have a cold." Mm-hmm. Or something.
Okay.
Sit down. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm getting the cotton swab stuffed up my nose, and I had COVID. So I'm wondering if there is a connection between me passing out or having an allergic reaction to ibuprofen, which I've been taking all my life, basically, and the COVID. Or if I took another ibuprofen, which I'm not about to do, would the same thing happen? Not having COVID.
I think, first of all, I don't think this is related to COVID. I don't think so. I mean, COVID is not really known to do this in and of itself. COVID might have been, you know, another factor within it. But you've got to assume you are allergic to anti-inflammatories. You got to assume that because you collapsed, your blood pressure went down. You know, it wasn't just a faint. It was a faint, you know, it was an allergic reaction. And so you've got to assume you're allergic to all anti-inflammatories, including aspirin. And the only way you would ever take anything like that again would be in an allergist's office where they would follow you. But frankly, Tylenol you can take. Tylenol is not related to that at all. So, yeah, you're allergic to ibuprofen. And I wouldn't take any anti-inflammatory or aspirin. I would stay away from that whole class of drugs. So, yeah, no more ibuprofen for you. That must have been something to have wake up and have all those people staring at you.
Oh, God, it was. Yeah. Yeah, it was. And they took great care of me and got me off. What I've done at home is, I mean, we've got a whole drawer full of stuff like that. And so I've taken red electrical tape and taped it around everything that has ibuprofen in it.
That's a good idea. You just put electrical tape. I like that idea. So you actually identify it so there's no thought that you even reach for something like that. That's a great idea. It's kind of a good idea to share with others. If you have somebody in the house that's allergic to something and not to other things, you really want to either separate it out so it's in a different spot or you want to put something on it so it's a big alert so you don't use it. So
those are my only two allergies that I know of. I mean, I can eat anything.
Right. And you're not, and the chances you're allergic to any foods or other things, you know, that's down the line. No, and allergies to anti-inflammatory drugs are not unusual. They're actually pretty common for many, many people. So, well, thank you very much. Thanks for sharing that. And I'm sure people are going to want to hear your story.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
You take care now.
Okay, bye.
Something else, the FDA recently, I don't know if it's on the market yet, approved a new nasal epinephrine. So that, in other words, you won't even have to use an epinephrine pen, and I don't know if it's on the market now or it's going to be on the market, but it'll be a nasal spray, and that's going to make things even better for people who have allergic reactions.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. 462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's do our first healthy living topic today. I'm going to actually just read this headline because this, this headline makes me feel better as a parent.
Yeah.
Is your kid a picky eater? It's probably not your fault.
I love it.
New research on this. I like that. It makes me feel good.
Give up your game. Yeah. Sorry, kids, picky eaters?
I have two kids. One is pretty picky. One is absolutely not picky about any food.
So what is pretty picky mean?
Pretty picky. This is our daughter, 6 year old, and she it's been a struggle to get her to eat anything other than bread.
Bread. Okay.
She's really into bread.
Yeah. Cheese.
Yeah, cheese, pasta. It's pasta. Like she's running a marathon every next day, it seems like. Like she's just carbo loading every single day. It's hard to get her to eat vegetables or, you know, anything that's fairly healthy. So,
well, it's an interesting study. I want to talk about, and then a very interesting book that came out a number of years ago. But, you know, you want your kids to eat broccoli. You want them to eat different things. You know, what part is genetic? Actually, and that's what the study is looking at. And what part is really what you actually do with your kids. And it's quite interesting. So this is research that came out of the United Kingdom, 2,000 pairs of identical and not identical twins. So identical twins are identical. They have the same genetic, you know, same genome. And non-identical twins are two different eggs. So they're completely different. These are twins that were born in 2007 in the UK. And parents answered questions about their kids' eating behaviors from 16 months all the way through to 13 years old. And this is part of a longitudinal study on kids. It wasn't specifically looking at that, but they're looking at nutrition. So here's what they found. In identical twins, if one twin was a picky eater, the other twin was a picky eater.
Okay.
In other words, and in non-identical twins, two different eggs, if one twin was a picky eater, half the time, the other twin was not a picky eater.
Okay.
In other words, so with identical twins, if one was picky and didn't want to eat this and that, the other one often was picky too. So genes appear to also play a role.
Mm.
Now, there's something, I have good news for you.
Okay.
Good news for
Great.
You. Pickiness tends to peak at 7 years of age.
Oh, good.
And often declines during adolescence. How old is she?
She's six.
She's
so,
six.
So, yeah, we're right in it.
You're right in the middle of it. You know, and picky eating causes a lot of stress for parents and for their kids, and fussy eating, you know, and parental blame, like, what are you doing? You're not raising your child the right way. What do you mean? They don't like broccoli. They don't like kale. What are you talking about? Kale ice cream? And they won't eat kale ice cream, which, by the way, does not exist, but I'd
Wait,
like
what?
To talk
it
about that.
Okay.
I don't think so. It exists somewhere. Kale ice cream exists in somewhere, but you can't buy it. But the issue is parents want to retain a relaxed environment and atmosphere around mealtimes because you want to avoid turning food into a power struggle.
Right.
Because it doesn't work. Now, there was a very interesting book years ago about how the French look at this.
Mm.
And as you know, the French are really very much into eating and eating well. And there was a book called French Kids Eat Everything. And it's going to be on our website. It's a very interesting book. And the subtitle is, I'm looking at it right now, I'm reading it, How Our Family Moved to France, Cured Picky Eating, Banned Snacking, and Discovered 10 Simple Rules for Raising Happy, Healthy Eaters. And it was a very interesting book because it actually talked about the fact that when you introduce textures and things early on, it does make a difference, and you will tend to actually help picky eaters eat different things. And it's quite interesting because in France, when they serve food in daycare, they don't just serve pizza, tater tots, and other things. They have a complete meal, a little meal for little kids.
Many courses, too?
Well, they have different things. They introduce different textures.
Oh, sure.
And so it's introducing those textures early that can make a difference. But this study showed that genes play a role and environment plays a role. So I've got a recommendation to you.
Oh, great. Let's hear it.
Good luck.
That's it, huh? That's all you can
child
say.
Is six.
And, well, it's not our fault. That
and it's not totally
great.
Your fault.
Okay.
And the reality is you introduce it and eventually you
She'll snap out of it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, snap. Snap out of it. It's like all of a sudden, gee.
She'll ease
I
out
like
of it.
Mushrooms and tomatoes. I hated mushrooms and did you like mushrooms or tomatoes when you were a kid?
I liked tomatoes as a kid.
Oh,
I don't
hated
know.
Tomatoes.
Yeah,
I
a lot
hated
of kids
tomatoes.
Hate tomatoes. Yeah.
I hated tomatoes. But I mean now I love tomatoes.
Yeah.
I've loved tomatoes for years. No, I think it's just introducing things and continuing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, this study showed genes play a role, so it's not your fault.
I'll take it. 800-462-7413.
And tell your wife, too, so she can take
it
also.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. You can leave the show a voicemail anytime you'd like.
Anytime.
Let's go to one of those voicemails. This is a caller from up north, our neighbors up north. This is from Quebec, Canada.
Hi, Zorbeth. I was just walking, listening to your podcast, and the thought occurred to me, I know you've traveled around the Mediterranean, as have I, and if you remember, it's all people live in villages and have to walk like goats up and down hill all day. And I was just thinking, although the Mediterranean diet is associated with longevity, have there been any trials that control for exercise? Perhaps we've been misled and we should all be eating more fried foods. Anyways, hope you can answer this, honey. Bye-bye.
You know, I think she's absolutely right. It's not just Mediterranean diet is probably not just the Med diet, but the Med diet and what they do for exercise. Mm-hmm. And if you look around the Mediterranean Sea, it's not as if they go, oh, I'm going to go to the gym for a half hour. They just walk more and they do more. So actually they're eating and they're walking. And maybe it's walking after they eat, but it's also how they eat. They don't snack all day. They don't eat prepared foods. So I think it's a combination of things. And I think she brings up a good point. And clearly, the Quebecois are very into much in eating because they really love food and they also love walking. And I don't know exactly what their longevity is, but I would, once again, eating well, doing things throughout the day, moving your body, they all really make a difference.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to log in to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for another edition of Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
All right, Zorba, you post a lot of things on Facebook, a lot of cool photos where you're traveling around, and we get all kinds of responses from our wonderful listeners. So I just want to highlight one of these
photos. That's because I'm cool.
You are, yeah. Look at you. Really. Clearly, cool. I can see how cool you are.
See, you got a happy face.
Yeah, happy face shirt. It says Managua.
Actually, we'll put that on the website.
Look sure.
See, happy. See?
So the recent photo you posted, it displayed it was the entrance to your granddaughter's soccer game.
Yes.
And it said, the sign said, please remember, the athletes are kids, the coaches are volunteers, the referees are human.
That's right.
This is a game.
Right.
And most importantly, remember that your children are
watching
you.
Right. Absolutely.
Great sign.
Great sign.
And I've seen these signs too. My kids are in soccer. I've seen them popping up all over the place.
They're important signs.
It's great.
Well,
it's
because
good to
you
see.
Always have
good
people,
reminder.
You have aberrant adults who start screaming and yelling at refs that might be 12 years old as if this is the Olympic game.
It's wild.
Well, it's a terrible situation.
Yeah.
I mean, not only is it wild, but it's like kids are looking at parents and saying, well, if they can do this, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. And but these signs are just wonderful. Anyway, so that's why I posted that.
We got all
on the
kinds
website.
Of comments from people. Yeah. It really struck a nerve. So first up, Mary Jo in Madison, Wisconsin wrote, we've been seeing more of these wonderful signs.
Yes.
Andrea in Shakopee, Minnesota wrote, that sign needs to be displayed everywhere.
Yes.
When my son was in Little League Baseball, the parents were horrible. Mm-hmm. At a championship game, one boy on the other team struck out. Mm-hmm. I wondered if he had a home to go to the way his dad carried on after that.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It's terrible. Oh. Gil in Chicago wrote, our son was in soccer when he was 5 years old. They were teaching children the basics of the game with open nets and no goalie. Mm-hmm. Two fathers got into a fist fight over a ref's call.
Cut into a
five-year-old soccer game.
Five-year-old soccer game.
It's insane.
Two fathers got into a fistfight over a five-year-old
soccer game.
We're laughing,
but it's a very sad situation. Finally, Patrick in Wisconsin offers up some wisdom. As a former referee and parent in soccer, I can assure parents that the game is being played by the kids, and interference from the crowd only places doubt where confidence needs to be. Support the kids with cheers and enjoy their play.
Well, that's absolutely the
case. It's perfect.
So what sports do your kids play?
So it's funny. I mean, my kids are both in soccer. Uh-huh. Yeah. My son's in all kinds of sports. Uh-huh. But he just had a soccer tournament last weekend where the parents of the other team were pretty wild. Mm-hmm. They were mm-hmm. at one point mm-hmm. yelling mm-hmm. at our kids, uh-huh. you know, our team's kids. Mm-hmm. And so our parents on yeah. our side started yeah. getting in it with, mm-hmm. you know, their parents mm-hmm. saying, please don't yell at my mm-hmm. children. And it was mm-hmm. over little rules, things mm-hmm. about whose throw-in mm-hmm. it was and whatever. And the ref wasn't stepping in, and it was just a chaotic situation. And it's just, you hear about it all the time, like how crazy it is. And I'll share a quick story. So my dad, sure. retired teacher, high school teacher, he would on the side referee basketball
oh.
for mm-hmm. like junior high, middle mm-hmm. school, high school mm-hmm. sometimes. He was reffing a game where some dad in the stands was just on his case the entire mm-hmm. time, the mm-hmm. entire game. Mm-hmm. So he's just screaming at my dad the whole time. Mm-hmm. And my dad decides at the break between the third mm-hmm. and fourth quarter, mm-hmm. he walks up the mm-hmm. bleachers to mm-hmm. this dad, mm-hmm. takes mm-hmm. his whistle off mm-hmm. around his neck, mm-hmm. puts it on this dad's neck and uh-huh. says, here you go. And the, mm-hmm. the dad says, what are you doing? My dad said, clearly you're doing a better job than I am at reffing. So why don't you just take over for the rest of the game? And everyone's watching this happen. And this dad got really embarrassed and said, oh, no, here, you can take it. You're fine. Sorry. And he apologized and everything. Thought it was kind of a funny thing my dad did.
Well, that was really good.
Yeah.
That's how, I mean, your dad handled it.
That was years, decades ago that
yeah,
happened. Yeah, and it's not yeah, gotten any
yeah,
better.
That's right. Like. Well, it doesn't get better because yeah. people, it doesn't get better for a whole bunch of reasons. There are emotional reasons. But the reality is our children are watching what we are doing as adults.
Right.
And the reality is we want to teach them, quote, good sportsmanship.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often parents and males are much more likely than females, although I've seen women get into it too, are just doing bad, they're doing a disservice to their child mm-hmm. and to all the other children.
Yeah.
And the kids are also embarrassed by what
absolutely.
You know, an aberrant parent does.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important for us to remember, it's only a game.
It's
I love
only
it.
A game. These a signs are great. Great reminder.
I love
reminder.
It though. A fist fight
at
a 5-year-old soccer
what
game.
What could they be arguing about? All right. Do you have a healthy living?
It's really not funny.
It's crazy.
It's really not laughable.
Yeah. Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you could always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. More calls coming up, more of your emails, and we'll be cooking up spicy vodka chicken parmesan.
And we'll be talking to Little Debbie. She's
oh,
been
yeah.
here for a long time.
That's right. A Little
That's
Debbie
right.
update, checking in. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And thanks, by the way, for listening to the show.
Yes, thank you very
Please
much.
Thanks.
We love doing this.
Yeah. And if you have a question for the good doc, 800-462-7413. Call anytime. Right. But before we do that, let's do the recipe. What do we have here? We have
spicy vodka chicken parmesan.
That
so
sounds great. All those things
sound great.
You got spice
in it, you got vodka in it, you have chicken parmesan. But it is a variation on chicken parmesan that
okay.
I think is really worth talking about.
Mm-hmm. Let's start it out here. Okay. What do you got first?
So 3/4 cup of vodka sauce.
3/4 cup. Now, what's vodka sauce?
Well, vodka sauce is, first of all, made with vodka. That's
mm-hmm.
what it talks. But vodka sauce, what happens is as you actually cook it, vodka has its own flavor after the alcohol actually evaporates off the sauce.
Oh.
So in other words, vodka has a taste when the alcohol is gone. And the taste has, it's not exactly a bitter taste, but it's a taste that has some notes that are sort of almost like bitterness that actually lead to enhanced sweetness. And sort of an interesting thing, sort of yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the best way to explain it. You can have something that is one way and then it's something else. You can have sweet and sour. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have something that is hot and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so vodka itself, when you get rid of the alcohol, has a very interesting taste to it. So 3/4 cup of vodka sauce.
All right.
You're going to use 2 8-ounce boneless skinless chicken breasts.
All right, 2 8-ounce boneless chicken breasts.
Half lengthwise to make four. Mm-hmm. You're going to have four things out of this. Teaspoon of kosher salt.
1 little tea kosher salt.
Large egg.
Large egg.
Cup of seasoned breadcrumbs.
Some seasoned breadcrumbs.
4 slices of fresh mozzarella cheese.
All right, 4 slices. It's got to be fresh mozzarella.
It's got to be, yeah, but it has to be fresh mozzarella.
That's exactly. Great. Yep.
And 1/2 cup of sliced hot jarred cherry peppers.
Ooh.
So in other words, if you've got some nice hot jarred cherry peppers, and you can find that in the olive and pepper and pickle aisle.
That sounds great. Let's make it.
Okay. So first of all, you're going to take the chicken breasts, boneless, skinless chicken breasts, and you're going to pound them down to make them nice and thinner.
You can you swing your gavel to pound? Like
I got
my gavel right there.
I got my gavel right here.
Just for some sound effects.
Let's do this.
Pound the chicken.
Pound the chicken. By the way, if you don't have a hammer to pound the chicken, you know, there are special hammers. The goal is actually you're going to take care of those fibers, kind of move them out, it makes it really much better, and you mm-hmm. want to have it nice and thin, and that's when you're going to season it. So you pound the chicken down, then place the egg into the breadcrumbs, and then what you want to do is mix it all together.
Mm-hmm.
You want to put the chicken cutlet, you know, the boneless, skinless chicken cutlet through there and mix it all up so it's basically on top of the chicken. Put it on foil or on a baking sheet. Put it in a preheated oven at 450. Bake it for 20 minutes until it's golden brown. Now, some people actually put that on a wire rack. That works too. But the reality is it's going to take about 20 to 25 minutes. And halfway through, you're going to have to turn it over because you want to make sure you really have some crispiness on the outside. Now, for the vodka sauce itself, you want to put it in a pot and under very minimal heat, you want to basically get it and simmer it. And the reason is you want to get the alcohol out of the vodka sauce. And if it gets to be too thick, you want a little bit of water to it so that it really has a very nice consistency so that it's sort of a thin sauce. Then you want to take the chicken cutlets out of the oven, spoon the vodka sauce over the cutlets, top with 1/2 of the cherry peppers, then put the 1 ounce of mozzarella cheese over the top of it and sprinkle with the remaining cherry peppers. So basically, you've got vodka sauce in there, and you've got mozzarella and cherry peppers on top. Put it back in the oven just until the cheese melts, and voila.
Mm.
Serve it hot.
Sounds really good.
It's really, really good. It's a wonderful sauce. And once again, you've got to make sure you simmer that vodka sauce for about 5 minutes to get the alcohol out of the sauce.
Okay.
If you want a copy of today's recipes, you can go to the World Wide Web.
Oh, yeah, that place.
www.sorbapastor.org. Again, that's www. Remember, you had to put that in.
Put it in.
And sorbapastor.org. Or, of course, through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Let's try to help out a caller in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Oh, first I want to say thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're most welcome. You're most welcome.
Yes, yes. Well, I am a woman of 58 and a half, approaching 59 years old. And ever from when I was around 50, I begin to have hot flash, which is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And
hot flashes can be awful, absolutely awful.
Yeah, that's right. Before that, you never realize.
I mean,
that.
For some women, they can be minimal, and for many women, they are not minimal at all. They're really very, very bothersome.
Yes, I stopped menstruation when I was 52,
mm-hmm.
and then this particular issue has been with me all these years. And I'm very healthy, not overweight, exercise, no high blood pressure, cholesterol, or whatever. And all the parts of my body are still in my body. The hot flash is not like continuous. That's the part my provider, my doctor say, this is a unique case. It can come like randomly. And then when I'm on a madrol progesterone for a while, maybe a couple of months,
So
I usually
take
it down when the symptom is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just as good as new.
Right.
And then you never know, maybe after another 1/2 a year,
mm-hmm.
it can come. come back again.
Right, right.
I don't have it for a whole year, and then now there's a flare-up again.
Right. So there are some interesting things. I recently did some research on this. So first of all, unfortunately, some women have hot flashes intermittently throughout their lives. I mean, it'll be 4 or 5 years, 10 years later, and they'll say, "Why am I getting these hot flashes? I haven't had them, you know, for 6 months or a year, and all of a sudden I have hot flashes." And the answer is, we don't have a lot of research on that, so we don't really know why that is, and we don't know why some women continue to have hot flashes and other women go through menopause and they don't have any hot flashes at all, or it's just something very minimal for a short period of time. We know that giving hormones, estrogen or estrogen progesterone combination, which is usually what we do with intermittent progesterone, that is the best drug for hot flashes. But we know that giving estrogen can have side effects. You know, there was the HERS study, HERS 1 and HERS 2, that seemed to show that there was an increased risk of cancer associated with that. And it turned out, although there may be an increased risk, and I say may, when you look back at the data and the data that's occurred after that, it was a little bit overblown. In other words, the risk was not as high as it appeared to be when the studies first came out. But nonetheless, still there are side effects about taking external estrogen. So it's a very individual thing. Black cohosh, which is sort of a natural remedy, works for some women but doesn't work for most women. Antidepressants actually seem to work well for some women. For hot flashes, and there are studies that have been done for women who are not depressed but take these drugs because they seem to help hot flashes. But I don't think we really understand this very much at all. So how many years has this been going on for?
I think I began at around 50, and then around 52, it's really bad. And then it's just like a come and go randomly. You never know.
Right, right, right. That's
so
right.
It's funny. And then I'm going to be on progesterone. Mm-hmm. They never really gave me estrogen because they say, just like what you said.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Then I just take like a soil supplement, and then progesterone. Mm-hmm. And then now it is like about 6-8 years. And it's not all the time. Like, they come, they go randomly after you're on medication. And then I don't have to take anything.
Right. So when you take the progesterone, medroxyprogesterone, how long do you take it for? Do you wait? In other words, you get hot flashes, and then you take it for a period of time?
I have to use high dosage.
Mm-hmm.
And then first, you try lower dosage when you can tell your body is not reacting yet. You add more. And then when you feel like you're good, and then I begin to taper it down, like sometimes 10 days, and then until I don't take progesterone at all. So this can be several months, like until you don't take anything.
Got it.
High to low, gradually.
And that's a function, you do it as a function of your symptoms, how long you stay on it. Is that correct?
Yes. Like you can feel it is working. You don't need that high dosage anymore. Then you begin to, taper it down until, like, at the end, you don't have it anymore. So it could be 2 months. Mm-hmm. It could be 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you're on the right stuff. I think I would continue doing that. If that were me, and I would do that based on good data, and progesterone is definitely safer than estrogen, you know, the two female hormones, I think progesterone is a much safer hormone. And over time, this may disappear. I mean, it doesn't mean you are going to have this forever.
I hope
some
so. Because I thought I'm done. I haven't got for 1 year.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Now, doctor, my provider also, she prescribed me an antidepressant. It is called prednisone. Do you think, she prescribed to me, I have it with me, but I try to cut down medication, as much as possible. I don't want to complicate things.
Uh-huh.
I have it. I haven't taken it.
Okay, so
do you think it's a good idea I should add this in?
Oh, sure. So let me ask you. You said your prescriber prescribed an antidepressant, but she did this because she said this may help with your hot flashes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, the
yes.
answer is it may help with your hot flashes. You don't have to be depressed to actually take
yes.
this, and it may work. Antidepressants do appear to help some women with hot flashes, and it has nothing to do with depression. It's, in other words, you're using it for the side effects of the antidepressant. And let me give an example. We use that in other medical problems. We use it for young men who have something called premature ejaculation, rapid ejaculators. And when you give them an antidepressant, they don't suffer from that. And it has nothing to do with depression. It's just using it for the side effects
uh-huh.
of the drug.
Okay.
We use it for some antidepressants called SNRIs, such as Cymbalta. We use for chronic pain. Arthritic type pain for people who do not have depression. So the answer is yes, you may want to try the antidepressant to see if it works, but you'd have to take it every day to see if it's going to work to keep the hot flashes from happening. But you may want to try the antidepressant when you feel like you're getting the hot flashes again to see if that works. That might work, in which case you may want to take that acutely when you have the hot flashes. You may want to see if the antidepressant keeps the hot flashes at bay. I think I would try that.
Thank you, doctor. You are so great. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, thank
okay.
you.
Thanks for your yeah. call. You take care.
You take care. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a break, Zorba, it's time for the segment where an honest-to-Pete doctor, you, takes on the almighty internet.
Honest-to-Pete?
Yeah, that's you. You're honest-to-Pete, right? Is that St. Peter? I don't know. What does that mean? Honest-to-who's Pete? I assume it's St. Peter.
I think
so. It seems
so.
Like a Midwest thing
that's
to
right.
say.
Honest-to-Pete.
Anyways, this is Google Doc.
I'm just putting background stuff. Sorry.
It sounds
sorry.
Great.
Sorry.
Just pounding
just
the table.
That's right. Pounding the table.
All right. The following email came from Lori in Middleton, Wisconsin. Lori writes, Dr. Zorba, my 14-year-old son is cracking his own neck loudly and several times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something online, a self-identified doctor
uh-huh.
who said that
self-identified doctor.
I think that's
okay.
the important component
yeah,
right there.
Right.
Who
yeah.
said that cracking mm-hmm. one's own neck mm-hmm. could increase mm-hmm. stroke risk
uh-huh.
and also something
uh-huh.
about the potential for causing clots
uh-huh.
in vertebral
mm-hmm.
blood vessels.
Uh-huh.
What
uh-huh.
do you think? Is it safe to crack your neck?
Of course it's safe
it's
to
okay.
crack your neck. You just go back and forth. Are you doing
Do you crack your neck?
Well, never. I never do you crack your neck?
There was a time in college uh-huh. when I was around
yeah.
that age where I discovered I could start cracking
yeah.
my neck
well,
and I was so excited
yeah, yeah.
but I can't
do it
anymore
yeah.
it doesn't work anymore
yeah. what happens
why.
Is you're actually pushing down on the liquid in your joint like when you crack your knuckles
mm-hmm.
and there's a gas in that liquid and it's the gas bubble popping that is making the sound.
That's the sound.
It's the sound of a gas
it's
bubble
not your
that
bones.
Is pop. No, it's not your bones. It's not your bones. What happens is you're increasing the pressure within the joint, and so the gases in the joint pop. So the answer is no, it does not have side effects, but it might be driving the parent crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, in which case you then have to figure out some way of stopping your kids from doing it. I think that's sort of what you do as a parent. You say, look, if you don't do it, I'll pay you $100.
What about, you know, like a swear?
I actually would never do that.
Yeah.
Do
what
that.
About a swear jar, but it's a crack neck cracking jar where anytime he does it, he has to put a dollar in the jar?
Uh-huh.
Maybe
yeah.
that works?
Yeah, try that
you're
with
not,
your kids, see what
you're
happens.
You're not sold on that.
No, I'm not sold on that. I'm more sold on reward. If
okay.
If you don't do it, I'll give you chocolate. You know something? It's a teenager. Are you really going to win in an environment with
Nothing
a teenager?
Work.
That's right. How about just saying no dinner for you?
There you go. He's 14. Yeah, he's going to want his
you
dinner.
You crack your neck, it's peanut butter tonight. Hey, that might work.
Would you like the good doc to clarify something you saw online? Stick your neck out. Post on our
Facebook
page.
Stick your neck out.
Send us an email.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Just,
Zorba,
you know,
at WPR.org.
All right. We have much more of the show to come. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting healthy living topic and more of your emails as well.
And Little Debbie.
And Little Debbie's coming up. We're going to do a little update on Little Debbie. So keep it right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health
from PRX.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That's what you're listening to. Hopefully you knew that.
800-46-
You're listening to me talk about it.
Yeah.
The number to call anytime with your healthy living question is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, before we get back to the phones, let's do our next healthy living topic. So I'm going to read this headline. This is interesting new research. Women of color are likely, more likely to undergo unnecessary C-sections.
Yeah, this is sort of it's a very serious issue
that
we have to begin to look at. So first of all, if we look at maternal mortality and infant mortality, the United States is in an awful position. I think we're number 14 or number 16 in the world. We're nowhere near number one. Mm-hmm. And here it is. We're in a country we spend almost twice as much as any other country when it comes to medical care. And when it comes to maternal mortality, infant mortality, we don't do a good job. But when you look at it, you look at white versus women of color, you see a big difference there. And this particular study looked at black women in New Jersey and discovered that they were 25% more likely to have a C-section than white women, even after when you looked at socioeconomic level, educational level, whether or not they got the right amount of prenatal care, a whole bunch of other factors, black women are just more likely to get C-sections. And the question is, why is that? Do they really need the C-sections, or are they getting the C-sections? Are there financial reasons behind this? Is it because we're not paying attention to other factors? This is a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big issue. And in fact, the First Lady, New Jersey's First Lady, a woman named Tammy Murphy, released a statement, because the study took place in New Jersey, that this was really, it was an examination of 1 million births spanning 68 hospitals between 2008 and 2017. And they've discovered there's a difference in the way black women and white women are basically looked at when it came to delivering a baby.
Mm.
What should we do about it?
It's good to talk about it. First of all.
First thing is you talk about it.
Yeah.
I think that's the first most important thing.
Let people know about it.
But this goes along the line with other things that are going on and the way people of color are treated differently in the emergency room. For instance, if they have pain, they are less likely to be given painkillers in the emergency room. And if so, they're giving a lower amount of painkillers, including black versus white if you have a kidney stone, which is awful, and you're in the emergency room. And we also look at the way women and men are treated when they have chest pain. In the hospital, a man with chest pain is more likely to be thought of as having a cardiac problem, and women are less likely to be thought of as having a cardiac problem. And I think part of the issues here have to do with bias that occurs within the medical system, for which we don't have a clear answer, but it starts with education, and this is important.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's take a listener email. The following question came from Dan in El Paso, Texas. Dan writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. 2 years ago, I went to the emergency room with abdominal pain and was told that my gallbladder had to be removed.
Okay.
When they cut me open, they could not find my gallbladder, so they closed me back up. Have you ever heard of this? My concern is, what happens if someday my gallbladder starts giving me trouble?
All right. Well, first of all, was the gallbladder in a different spot so they couldn't find it?
Sometimes that can happen.
Well, that happens, but a good surgeon is going to hunt around and find the gallbladder if it's in an unusual spot. Second of all, why did they decide it was the gallbladder? They must have done some imaging to see that the gallbladder was actually the cause for the problem. So, you know, there's some questions that are impossible to answer on the air.
Right.
So I think for this particular person, if they want to get a second opinion, they should get a second opinion of why they opened them up in the first place and what imaging study they looked at to say you needed surgery. Because you don't just say, oh, I think it's your gallbladder and open you up. They have to do some imaging to actually see what's going on. So we don't have all the data here, and neither does the patient.
Have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is from a listener in Missouri.
I wanted to know if currently the artificial sweetener saccharin is still causing cancer in animals, in rats. That used to be the way it was long, long time ago. The reason I'm concerned is because here at the nursing home, the sweetener they serve is saccharin. So I'd like to be reassured that now saccharin is not causing cancer. Thank you very much. Your show is great.
Ah, great. And thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, the data years ago, it still stands true. They never repeated the data. The data was back. What happened is there was a sweetener called Sucrol that was taken off the market. It was made by Abbott. We're talking about back in the 60s. And it was taken off the market. It really worked well, but they said, well, we think it's causing cancer in laboratory animals. Then they checked saccharin, which had been on the market for a gazillion years, I don't know, for a long, long time, and discovered that caused cancer in laboratory animals. They were going to take that off the market, and there was a hue and cry from the public going, you're not taking the non-caloric sweetener off the market. And they forced the FDA to turn around and saying, okay, we're going to keep saccharin on the market, but we're still going to say causes cancer in laboratory animals. And the answer is, nobody ever tests it anymore. It's a generic drug, and the reality is it causes cancer in laboratory animals and rats, but people still take it. Now, does that actually apply to humans? I don't know. And Sweet and Low, I think Sweet and Low is one of the sweeteners that used to have a combination of saccharin and something else. But those little saccharin tablets, have you ever seen the little?
I remember those
little. They look
little,
like tablets. Yeah. They have a little thing. You put it right in there. It tastes a little bit bitter. And the reality is it's still being manufactured and used. And the reality is that's what it is. Take your chances.
I remember when I was a kid, my mom had this bottle, and it was liquid, and it had like a little dispenser where it would just give you a tiny drop of whatever sweetener it was. Was that saccharin? Do you remember that one?
Probably saccharin. Might have been something else. Yeah. Probably saccharin. A little drop that you
I used to just put it on my mouth and just
did it taste bitter?
Yeah, it was really bitter, but for some reason I liked it.
Saccharin.
Yeah.
Saccharin. That's because you were a kid.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's because you're weird.
Maybe. 800-462-74. This explains a lot of things, I feel like.
That's right. That's the start. It's the whole start.
It was like a gerbil cage, you know, the little like nozzle, but it didn't have that little straw thing.
That's right.
It just gave you a little.
Did you have gerbils?
I did have gerbils.
Yes, I didn't have gerbils.
Yeah.
So
it but we didn't give the gerbils saccharin. But they did in the lab, didn't they? Or was it rats? It was probably rats.
Rats, not gerbils. Not gerbils.
Anyways, we're off topic.
The gerbils got off that day. The gerbils got off.
All right. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right. Before we clock out Zorba, it's time to take an email from the Grammar Police.
No, no, it's the Grammar Police.
That's great. Someday we're going to add that in there. Maybe we don't need to because you clearly like to sing it every time.
I do. So I like to chime in.
It sounds amazing. The following note came to us from Dennis, who says he's from the, quote, preservative police.
Oh, preserve your tip. Okay.
I don't think we've heard from them before, have
no,
we?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But we
it
might
would have been a long
have.
Time
long
ago
time
if we did.
That's
long
right,
time
that's
ago.
That's right.
Yeah. So yeah. Dennis says, Carl, this is to me, I guess, though Zorba claims to bang a gavel and you pretend he does, how do we know he isn't banging his Little Debbie snack cake? Is that treat still fresh, or is it harder than the gavel? We haven't heard reports about it lately. Please start filling, and filling is in all caps,
yes,
filling us in, or we'll be, all caps, frosted. Thanks for your work. Dennis, thanks for bringing this up, because
right,
it's been,
right.
we're celebrating
a
one-year anniversary of
right.
opening
Little
that
Debbie.
Little Debbie snack
right.
cake. It's right
so,
there.
So first of all, we are going to take a picture of Little Debbie mm-hmm. and put Little Debbie on the website. I think that's really important. And it's going to be on my Facebook page.
Oh, great.
It's really important. Now, first of all, let's hear the sound of Little Debbie.
It sounds like the plastic gavel.
No, it doesn't. No? It has a different sound to it. Listen. But here we go.
Okay, yeah.
Here's
the
Little Debbie.
Got...
Listen. Come on. That's a different
riveting
sound than...
radio.
I mean, come on. You can tell the difference. But you can tell the difference. Now, taste-wise, I don't know if you can tell the difference, but that's
between
it.
Between the gavel and the Little Debbie?
I've never had a gavel for lunch, and I've not had... You can still smell it. Smell it.
Oh, yeah.
It's been 1 year,
it's
and that
still
means...
sweet smelling.
That means... that there still are gases coming out of the Little Debbie cake that, because if you can smell it, that means there still are gases coming out of the Little
One
Debbie cake.
1 year later.
Now, one other thing about the Little Debbie cake, I want to tell you something. No insect has ever crawled on Little Debbie, even though it's been here. Now, we are in the middle, but you know how it is in your house. Sometimes you'll see a stray ant. Not on Little Debbie.
Yep, no way.
Not on Little
not
Debbie
a
at
chance.
All.
They want
so,
nothing
you know,
to do with it.
1 year, 1 year down... One more year or two more years to go. Little Debbie is not getting retired.
I was going
to
ask you, what do we do? Do we just throw it out now? But
no,
you
of course
keep,
we
you
don't.
Th- keep this
Come
thing?
On. We're
in
not going to throw this out. Of course I'm going to keep it in
like
the studio.
It's like our little air freshener
it's a
now.
Little, it, you know, it's something. It has such an it smells delicious.
It smells
Here,
great.
Smell There's it again. No, it actually has an... It has,
yeah,
can you smell it?
It's,
yeah.
it's something.
If you're into Little Debbie cake, and it says, please do not disturb Zorba. Now, at some point, somebody is going to throw this out.
I can't
out,
believe no one's tossed it yet.
No.
All right. Did you catch a mistake Zorba made, or do you just want to hear more about Little Debbie? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week?
Absolutely.
All right. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show
anytime.
Online, anytime. That's
anytime.
It. You got to wait for it. Anytime. Visit us on the web
at Zorba. I can't even pronounce my name. At ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us
anytime.
Leave us a question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.
From PRX.